Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Ali Moreno and Stevie Nicol. I'll tell you what, later on in the programme, you've got to see these quotes from Antonio Conte that he made after Spurs' defeat against Burnley. We'll be discussing them in some detail. But first, we kick things off in the Champions League. Atletico Madrid against Manchester United was the big game on Wednesday, and it finished Atleti 1, Manchester United 1. Felix with a header early on to give Atleti the lead. Alanga late on in the tie, giving United the equaliser, which I imagine, according to the bookies, will make them favourites to make it through to the next round. Well, for more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Frank Leboeuf and Nader Manura are with us. We'll hear from them in a moment. But first, Ali, we've seen a lot of Atleti this season, a lot of rubbish from Atleti. I don't think I've ever seen them this campaign dominate a team as they did in that first half.
Yes. And what's amazing is Atletico Madrid today, the way that they score their first goal, or the only goal of the game, early cross, header from Joao Felix, and you're thinking, where did this come from? As you said, we have seen them play time and time again this season, and that build of a play has not been part of what they do. Defending has not been part of what they do. Pressing together has not been part of what they do. Dominating games and taking the game to other teams in the manner they did against Manchester United in the first half has not been part of what they've done this whole year. So I have to believe that if this is what they have been over the course of a season, it's more of a reflection of what Manchester United are currently than what Atletico Madrid were today in particular. The first 45 minutes, there was only one team on the field, and it was Atletico Madrid all the time. Having said that, if you're Manchester United, you say, you know what? I don't care what you think. It's 1-1, and we're going home with an advantage in terms of being now the favorites because we should win at home against Atletico Madrid. This is what I would tell you about both teams. They're both awful.
Right.
They're both bad teams. Bad. Really, really bad teams. And they're disorganized in some of the things that they do. And I would pose this question about Manchester United more so than Atletico Madrid. What are they trying to do on the field? What is the game plan? When you watch them play, what is it that was out there in terms of, look, this is our plan and our identity today against Atletico Madrid. This is what we're trying to do. We're trying to force them one way. We're trying to high press. We're trying to wait for them. What is it that you're trying to do in order to win a game? There doesn't seem to be a plan for Manchester United, but they stumble into a goal, 1-1, and they'll take it.
Was that first half about Atleti resetting, rediscovering that form that saw them get so much success over the last few years? Or how much was it Manchester United just letting them play the way they did?
I think you've got to give the credit to Atletico Madrid. And I think when you look at the overall game and you look at the overall stats, particularly the possession, tells you how much they fell away in the last part of the game.
Yeah.
Because for 45 minutes, Manchester United didn't get a kick. So to end up having more possession at the end of the game tells you that Atleti definitely raised their game to what we were expecting them to be for the whole of this season, which never materialised. But Manchester United, I was saying to you just before the game finished, if you ask me to talk about Manchester United, I don't know what to tell you. I really don't. You know, a lot of teams try and play a certain way, but maybe don't have the players to do it.
Right.
I can't figure it out. I can't figure out what they're trying to do. You know, I think it's meant to be a 4-3-3, but in the end up, I don't know what it is, because there doesn't seem to be any shape to them. Defensively, it seems like Ranić can't make his mind up who should play centre-back, because You don't play a centre back at right back.
That was Lindelof.
Such a big Lindelof. No centre back likes to be taken wide first and foremost. And so to actually take one and to stand out there, I want you to do what a fullback does. It makes no sense whatsoever. And of course, they lost the goal from that side.
Yeah.
Neither him nor Fred could get sorted. The ball comes in and it's in the back of the net. So, listen, as Ali said, two bad teams. One that doesn't really know what it's about. At least if you're Atletico Madrid, you can say, you know what, 45 minutes we looked like a team.
Mm.
We closed as a team. We pressed the ball as a team. We scored a good goal. We actually hit the crossbar. So at half-time, you actually had the semblance of a team. Unfortunately,
they ran out of gas. Yeah.
They ran out of gas. It fell apart in the second half.
Do you agree, Nadim? Two poor teams?
Yeah, I would have to say so. I think given the positions in the leagues, in the respective leagues at this moment, it's kind of the game that you sort of expected. And interestingly, though, one of the broadcasters over here was showing the game. They said before kickoff, oh, United head into this as favourites because Atletico are having such a poor season domestically. And I thought, are we forgetting something here? And I think we kind of saw that in the way that that game panned out. I thought at times Atletico looked good with the crowd behind them. And you can see they're a different beast when it comes down to the Champions League and these sort of like home ties and the importance of them. But then, you know, the game finishes 1-1 and it's a flat game, especially the way United play. And you ask yourself the question, like, it would have been probably more of a surprise, I believe, if United played well. Because as I look back, when was the last time they were sort of gaining ahead of steam and they looked really, really good, whether it was under this manager or Solskjaer before. So, you know, it's one of those games. They got something from it, which they'll be very happy with. But it's nothing to say that there's a guarantee that they'll win at Old Trafford either. Because the fact is, you know, this idea of, yeah, they've gotten the tie and then the second leg should be fine in front of 70,000 people. We've seen them lose at home. So the fact is, it's still very, very open.
Frank, we discussed on yesterday's show, didn't we, the fact that if there was ever a time to play Atletico Madrid, this is it. Given their form so far this season, Manchester United made them look world-class-like in that first half, which is such an indictment, surely, on Rangnick, his tactics and the players.
Yeah, I have to agree with all my colleagues, and you're absolutely right. You know, I was wondering, you know, what was the plan, as Ali said, of Manchester United, and I felt that there was a plan from Atleti and from Simeone, where Lodi was the key man, in fact, on the left side, because he was becoming the fifth defender defensively, but also a left wing on the offensive aspect of the game, and he made that difference. And in fact, they lost that game where they made a substitution with Lemar coming in, and Lemar didn't come back as the fifth defender. And I think on top of it, Atleti lost their mojo in a way that they thought about fighting against the referee and the decision of the referee, where they should have kept the mind that they had, you know, the first 45 minutes. But you're absolutely right. Manchester United made them look good the first half, where the whole season they were very average, I would say. And Manchester United did draw that game because of the mistakes of Atletico, not because of their talent. Because I didn't see anything good coming from Manchester United. That was an appalling performance today from the Red Devils.
You know, there was one thing that happened today that I think sums up both these sides and both these players right now. It was a free kick for Manchester United, 25 yards out.
Mm-hmm.
The man on the ball was Ronaldo. Number one, we were all sitting there going, why are you letting Ronaldo take it? Because he's probably going to hit the wall. And you look at the wall, and Griezmann is lying, sitting on his backside behind the wall. I mean, 5 years ago, two players who had the football world at their feet, and we're watching one of them lying behind a wall and the other one taking a free kick that we all knew was only going to end up, well, either one in the wall or two where it did, way high over the crossbar.
I know some of the tweets we're going to get, Ali.
What's that?
Because I know Twitter and social media will say,
stay up over there.
Wait a minute, after PSG beat Real Madrid, you're all critical of Lionel Messi. Will you be as critical of Cristiano Ronaldo?
Yes. Of course. And why not? We don't discriminate. I know that people think that we have favorites or whatever, But the truth is, if you're Cristiano Ronaldo and you're gesturing and posturing and the arms are going everywhere, and you have no real impact on the game other than complain about fouls or yellow cards or
lack of free kick.
Yeah, free kick. Yes, that Stevie documented so very well. There was nothing about Cristiano Ronaldo's performance today that you can highlight and say, ah, there he is. That's why he's on the field. But you can say that about many of the players in Manchester United, and that's how poor the performance was, that is going to get sort of, in some ways, kind of put aside because, well, it's 1-1. It's okay. Right. I think it puts a makeup on what was a very, very poor display for many of the players. Bruno Fernandes ends up having the assist on the goal. But up until that point, it was turnover after turnover. And worst of all, worse so than the turnovers, is the fact that defensively, he doesn't give you any help. In fact, he takes you, makes Manchester United so disorganized defensively. He goes and gets a ball from center backs and then goes to the right and then goes to the left and appears everywhere. But defensively, he's not appearing anywhere. There's a hole there for Manchester United. They don't control the midfield. They don't control games. And mind you, this was an Atletico Madrid team who Antoine Griezmann came off the bench because he's been injured for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Koke out injured, team captain. Gianni Carrasco, perhaps their most dangerous player down the left-hand side, out because he was suspended. All sorts of absences. Luis Suarez didn't even come on the field because he's carrying an injury as well. All sorts of absences from Atletico Madrid, and still they were far the better team and deserved more out of this game.
Did someone's wall fall down? What happened? Who was
know.
That? Was that
I don't know.
Frank or was that Nadim? Frank, nope. What happened?
No, somebody asked me to go a little bit forward, so one of my stuff, you know, from my play fell off. But that's okay. I'm fine. You know, that's all right. I was carefully listening to Ali. Can I add something about that, by the way? We talked about Ronaldo, but can we talk about also Bruno Fernandes? Because I want to know what that guy was doing the first half. He's supposed to be the skipper, well, almost the skipper of the game. And we don't see him when you have a big game. Well, okay, he gave an assist, so people are going to find an excuse for him. But really, I'm expecting much more from a guy like that.
Who's going through, Frank?
Poor. Oh my God!
I don't think he is.
I don't know. Do I really have to choose? Because I really don't know, and I don't think it does really matter. Because I don't think neither of the two is going to win the Champions League. So I would say, wow. Who cares?
You and your hot takes, Frank. Yeah. Nadim, who's going through?
I'm going to say United. It's probably going to be 0-0 in that second game, extra time, penalties, and they'll somehow sneak through like that. But I'm with Frank. I can't see whoever's winning this game going through winning the whole competition. So I'll just say them, but what difference does it make anyway?
Who's going through, Ali?
Oh, I'm going to go with a flyer here, Atletico Madrid.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe going away and playing at Old Trafford, just like they did against Liverpool a couple of years back, that maybe this is what bonds this team together, brings them together. They fight, they'll get a goal, win it 1-0. Maybe an old-school performance from Atletico Madrid.
I'm with Frank. I have no idea.
Well, neither do I, but I took a position.
Oh. It's your invisible coin that you're tossing.
Just told me Atletico. Yeah. And seriously, for every single reason you could say one, you can say the same about the other team. I mean, come on.
One positive, I suppose, from a United perspective, Elanga coming on, his first touch, aiming up in the back of the net, Nadim.
Yeah, 100%. You know, he's an exciting young player for them. Obviously, you wouldn't have fancied him to be the game winner when you've got someone like Ronaldo and Fernandes on the field and so on. But it's a big goal, it's a big moment. And the fact that he comes on and tries to stretch the game for United poses a far different threat to Atletico. And that's what they needed at times. So it's good to see him doing that. And it's good to see the youngsters coming through the academy and being a big part of their success. And as the United fans sang his name for 10 minutes, it's probably the highlight of the whole game. And it makes it worthwhile for the fans that went over. So, yeah, so definitely a positive for them.
Oblak?
Well, this guy has been so good that you can't blame the defence only for losing the amount of goals they have this year.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, if you're being given that amount of praise that he's been given, right, you have to come up with some saves.
Right. Was his positioning right wrong?
Yes.
Right.
He was too far. There was Alanga had too much of the goal.
Yeah.
But again, you've got to give the kid, to have the composure to pick the spot out, it's fantastic. But he shouldn't have had that much room.
2-2 for João Félix then.
Yeah. He's a hero now for Simeone. He loves him now. Hated him 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Jules is in the big boy chair once again for the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast that drops tomorrow. Nadim, I think I'm right in saying, will be the special guest. Mm-hmm. Be sure to check it out.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Meanwhile, in the Premier League on Wednesday, Liverpool thrashed Leeds United by 6-0. Mane with a brace, Salah with a couple as well. Lovely goal from Matip, and Van Dijk getting on the score sheet as well. That result means that just 3 points separate Manchester City and Liverpool at the top of the table, all to play for then in the title race. Well. Hey.
Well, it's in their hands, basically.
Hey. But what?
It's in their hands, yes. Win out, you win the Premier League.
60-40 is how everybody's been saying over the last week here. Does that change things at all, that result?
You okay?
What just happened?
Yeah, I'd say yes. Because you've got to see it's 50-50.
Oh, thank you.
Well, really?
I think so. Yeah. Listen, it's you can see Liverpool beating City. You can also see City beating Liverpool.
Oh.
So you can't separate them.
It's at the Etihad. It's at the Etihad.
Even though it's at the Etihad, right, you can still see Liverpool going there and winning.
Right.
Listen, if Tottenham can go there and score three, so can Liverpool.
Yeah.
So I think it's got to be 50-50.
Wow, let's see how the bookies have things set then, with City 3 points ahead at the top of the table. They face each other in April. Bookies still have City as big favourites, 10-2 on Liverpool, 5-2. Remember, I think City were 10-1 on to one stage. Frank, do you agree with Steve's assessment? We're now at a 50-50 title race.
Yes, definitely, because the pressure is going to be on the Man City team, and they know that they can't fail anymore. And when you know that, it's like when you're a driver, a Formula One driver, you know, it's always better to be just behind because you just wait for the mistake of the other. So I think that's going to be a big task for Manchester City to keep the lead, and Liverpool just have to do their job and wait for the for a slippery curve from City, and maybe win at the Etihad Stadium when they face each other.
Manchester City TV, how much are you sweating?
Oh, you're talking to me? Oh, is that me? Oh, sorry. I'm as impartial as they come, Daniel. I'm as impartial as they come.
Of course.
I don't think it's 50-50, purely because City have a three-point gap at the top. And we talk about Liverpool, and we can see them potentially beating City at the Etihad. But as Stevie said, you know, you can also imagine City doing the same and say, what happens if that game finishes, ends up being a draw, you know? For me, I don't think whoever wins the league will win the next 12 games. So as a consequence, more points will be dropped. And with that, you'd rather be the team that's got a three-point gap at this moment in time, in my opinion, as opposed to the team that's chasing, hoping for something to go wrong, because you never know how football's going to go, especially when you bring in the Champions League later stages, for example. So, as I say, you'd rather be number one at this moment, in my opinion, and City, even though the gap's dropped to three, you know, they've won the league throughout the last four seasons, so they'll feel confident. I'm sure they'll be able to mount a solid title defence.
Of course, one of the big reasons that we're in this situation is that Spurs went to City at the weekend and won by 3 goals to 2. So surely it was a layup today.
Yep.
At Turf Moor to beat struggling Burnley. No. Bemi's goal was enough to see Burnley beat Tottenham by 1-0, meaning they missed out on the opportunity to move themselves up the table to be level on points with West Ham and Arsenal. What's striking isn't necessarily that result. Antonio Conte, after the game, wasn't pulling any punches. Interesting stuff from the Italian coach saying, "I need to talk to the club. Tottenham have to make an assessment about the club, about me. We need to find the best solution. I can't accept to keep losing. I'm sorry. Here coaches change, but players are always the same, but results don't change." This, of course, Tottenham's fourth defeat in their last 5 matches. Nathan, what's he doing?
I think he's just realised where he's been coaching, because this is what this sort of critique that we have of Spurs, we have had for many years now. You know, they're the side that, like, at times can look really good, but consistently seem to let you down. And I think with Conte coming in, the belief was that, you know, maybe there'd be money there, maybe could change the mentality. But the club, this is Spurs. Like, is anyone surprised that they... Well, I'm not surprised anyway, because they could beat City, because they've beaten City in the past, but then they lose to Burnley. It's almost like at times Spurs are the worst front runners in the Premier League. Every time it seems like they should definitely be winning, should definitely be going and backing up a good result and doing really well, they appear to go missing. And that's the sort of inconsistency of Spurs. And I think he's finally realised that. And a manager of his calibre being there, I think he probably would have gone into the dressing room after the game and just looked at the players and seen that this is who they are. And whatever he does, he can't change that. And as a consequence, I think he's sort of had his come into whatever moment where it's like, well, what am I doing here? If it was going to be a long-term thing and he had some real winners in there and so on, it'd be a different conversation. But the fact is, he's had a look at it. Like, he doesn't lose that many games. The training's the same. The mentality is the same for him and his staff. But there's nothing there. So realistically, I guess he's got to ask the question, like, what is the point?
Look, we've all gone home and we've cried privately, questioned about our lives. But why do you need to do that in public?
Are you okay?
Why does he need to do that in a post? Right, transfer window shut. You're bringing in no new players now. Why can't you go out there and coach and get the best out of these teams? He's getting paid millions of pounds a year. Go and do your job. This doesn't help anyone, does it?
No, but it sounds like right now he's with the right team. You talk about inconsistent. Well, his messages are inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
10 days ago, he was talking about a project.
Mm-hmm.
About he thinks he understood what they needed. And then 10 days later, he's basically sounding as though he's saying, look, these are so bad, even I can't coach them, and I'm not prepared to be with a bunch of losers. I mean, that's pretty much what he's saying. He's flung the whole team under the bus. He's basically saying, I'm too good, I'm not used to it because I'm too good, I'm used to better players, and I'm doing all the training, but this lot isn't good enough. He's thrown that whole bunch of players right under the bus.
It's pathetic, isn't it, Frank?
Oh, my God, it is. I mean, it's crazy. I totally agree with what Stevie just said, you know. The guy has to come back to earth, you know, and make sure that his feet are touching the ground. Because, really, he's really saying, they're too bad. I can't do anything, and I'm too good. You know, I have, you know, my background, I have my past, and I showed to the world that I'm a very, very good coach, and I'm very too good for those crappy players. Come on, how can you do that? You signed, you knew the task that you had in front of you. Go for the job, you know, work hard. Try to change the politics maybe at the club. Try to change the philosophy of the players and their mentality. That's your task. You won't teach the players how to play football. They're professional players. They normally know. Some of them played the Champions League final some years ago, so they know how to play. But they need a coach who give them or show them the path on the right way to be successful again. And that's your task. And as you said, you are paid millions of euros per year to do that. So don't quit after 2 months or 3 months. I don't know.
The real issue for me is his own separation from the failures, putting himself aside from losing 4 out of 5. Essentially saying the results don't change, the players don't change. managers are the only things that change, so I have to imagine that it's those guys over there.
Yeah, they're the constant.
I couldn't be the problem. None of this sticks to me. It has to be them. It's Captain Deflecto all over again. And we thought we had enough of that with Mourinho, but no, it's been activated and activated in full mode by Antonio Conte, that if we're bad, it has to be them. If we're good, then it's us together. That is a really, really slippery slope to have as a manager, because if there was ever anything that truly loses the team for you, it's doing this.
Right.
If the players were teetering, if they were kind of hoping to get on board to whatever message you had to put out there, then this, and I mean, there's no doubt about it. This pushes everybody off the boat. Everybody's now going like, this guy's who we have to play for? So then a guy who has been around as long as he has doesn't do this by accident.
Right.
This is just blowing everything up and let me get out of here because this is not for me. I made a mistake coming here. Let me get out. I don't want any part of this. I'm just going to blow it up. Please fire me. We have seen this attitude before from Antonio Conte, in which towards the end at Chelsea it was almost as if every press conference was sending a message. I'm here. Fire me. Why haven't you fired me yet? I'm ready to go. That has been his attitude before, and it's not surprising that he's doing it now. What's surprising is that he's been so quick, and that he's been so quick to say, it's them, it's not me, deflected on them, has nothing to do with me and my reputation. Please, you guys, Spurs, do not ruin my reputation. It's all your fault.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think this is an interesting situation because Conte coming to Spurs, it felt strange because here was a manager whose stock was incredibly high. It was like a renowned winner. And you're thinking, well, is he going to be able to get Spurs into shape? And so what I wanted to ask really was to Stevie, when he was coaching, like you can do the tactical stuff and all that. But what happens if you actually look around at your squad and the mentality that you want them to have isn't there? Do you think you can coach that into them? Or is it a case you have to accept it? And at that point, if you choose to accept it, doesn't that make you essentially the same as them?
I'll tell you what you have to do. And I did it. When I joined the Reds, we were rock bottom. And we were rock bottom because, yes, other teams had better players, but we also had absolutely no atmosphere around the place and no togetherness.
Right.
And so you accept, when you're building something, that you're going to lose games. Now, nobody wants to lose 4 out of 5. But you have to keep a smile on your face. You can't go around with your head between your legs if you're in charge. They have to see that you've got hope.
Right.
And it's like, if the manager's got hope and faith in me, then I'm going to give them everything I've got. Now, when you go in your office and you shut the door and you bring your coaching staff in, and now you can start slagging everybody to death. How are we going to win on Saturday with this mob? What? Oh, no, we're playing against them, and he's going to be up against them. So you can have your 10 minutes of losing it, but you know what? As soon as you open that front door again and you walk out, you go, right, this is how we're going to win. This is what we have to do. You've got to encourage them and bring them along. And the ones that you know you want to get rid of, you've got to just keep them. At least get 100% effort out of them until you can make the change. Until you can make the change. So you do that, but if you're going to step into that knowing what you've got, don't blame them when it goes wrong. You're there to help them.
Right.
Hey, how about a basic concept? Do your job.
Yeah.
That is part of the definition.
Oh, yes.
These are the players you have available, and so work with what you have and make the best out of it. Instead, the solution is, this guy's, it's not for me.
Nadim, how's that locker room feeling tomorrow at training?
Imagine what they feel like now, probably on the coach on the way back, thinking, well, the manager's basically just said, well, none of us are good enough, and also doesn't believe that any of us have got the right mentality. And at this point there, I think there'll be a split, because some people, as you guys have been alluding to, will be really upset by that. And I think there'll be some as well who said, well, I'll try and prove him wrong. But the fact is, it seems like Conte has distanced himself from that playing squad. But then again, you ask yourself the question, like, was he forced to go and manage Tottenham Hotspur with the players that they have there now? Did he not do the due diligence to understand the task that he'd have at the front door. You know what I mean? So I don't get it. But as a player, you know, it's not a great situation to be in. But the manager has all the power. He came in with a high stock level, and it's not really dropping any lower, even though he's throwing them under the bus. And as the players, it seems like all the blame's falling to them. They lost 4 out of the last 5, and people are going to be asking questions of them, because God forbid if they ask what's wrong with Conte.
Go on, Frank.
Yes, after being very critical towards Conte, all of us, you know, and your question about how the players would feel, I put myself, you know, being on the coach, you know, talking to the other players, saying, well, the coach is bad. Now, can we say something about the players and how they're going to feel now? And I will be Kane, I will be Son, I will be some others. I will talk to the others. Are we that bad? How can we be that bad, you know? Why so many coaches came and we don't have results? What's wrong with us? I will start questioning that. Maybe that's what Conte thinks the player will do to react, maybe. But as a player, with all the results that I would have had, I would have said, okay, guys, there is something wrong. We need to have a meeting between us, maybe try to find that togetherness that people are talking about, and maybe try to find that mentality where we become warriors again. How come we reached the Champions League final some years ago? Yeah, of course, with some different players, but with a mentality that we all had, and we lost it. I think the players also have to get their own responsibility in that matter, because they're on the field. They have to sort out the problem too.
I think you're forgetting, Frank. What you're talking about is teams that you played in that were winning regularly. When you play for a side that's supposed to win and you lose a couple of games, that's the kind of thing that happens.
You did just beat City, though.
Yeah, but I'm talking specifically about Frank saying that the players have to get themselves together and say, right, what's the problem? That particular scenario works if you've lost a couple of games and you're sitting second in the league, right, and you're playing with a great team. Because you don't have to do it very often. But you're dealing with a group of players at Tottenham that for at least two seasons, at least two, have got used to losing. So that sort of meeting wouldn't work, I don't think, Frank, with this group of players. I think with the top players, absolutely it works because we all expect to win and we have won. But with this group, no.
I won't ask if you think Spurs are going to finish in the top four. Go on, Frank, quickly.
Stevie, I'm sorry. Yeah. I just if I take all the players individually, they're not average players. They're all almost international. They've been good at some point to come to Spurs, because you don't arrive at Spurs being an average player. Well, I think that way. So I really think that it's... they can react as well. I understand what you're saying, but I think I would be very worried about what I produce on the field if I was a Tottenham player. And I would say, I really think it's due to us. So what can we do to make sure that without any coach that we would need or not, react in a good way? Because I think it's possible to do so. They're not, with all due respect, Burnley, Norwich City, or a so-called lower team. This, I think, still a good squad, but they have to play together, they have to fight together, then they have to show their skills.
And no doubt about it, Arsenal fans will be absolutely loving this at the moment, even more so if they can get a victory against Wolves tomorrow. All to play for in that game, the run of wins that Wolves have put in means that they are starting to be in the conversation, aren't they, for a Champions League place. According to the bookies, though, it is Arsenal who are favourites. Also on Thursday, a bit of Europa League action. Hey. All to play for in Italy, of course. Napoli taking on Barcelona. That finally poised at 1-1. Borussia Dortmund travel to Scotland, looking to turn around that 4-2 home defeat that they suffered in the first leg. Of course, we'll be discussing all of those big games, plus reflecting on Arsenal against Wolves on the next edition of ESPN FC. Who knows what Conte will be doing then. Be sure to join us. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Now, there's another Champions League match today, Benfica against Ajax. 2-2, thoroughly entertaining. But, Ali, I think Ajax will be travelling back to Holland, scratching their head and wondering how on earth they didn't win this match.
So many chances, so many missed opportunities, and then the goals that they gave up. The own goal by Haller, and then the second goal, where the goalkeeper makes a save and just kind of doesn't do anything with the save, just allows then the attacking player to come in and head it in. While they will be discouraged that they were not able to win this game, I think they will be encouraged by how superior they are to Benfica, because they went to Benfica and really should have won this game handily. They did not. Now they go back to Ajax, to Amsterdam, and I assume that if they put the same sort of performance together, cutting out some of the mistakes, there's no doubt in my mind that Ajax should go through onto the next round.
That's it, isn't it? You're frustrated, but you saw enough in that game to suggest that Ajax should make it through to the quarterfinals.
Yeah, listen, if you sat down before the first leg and you were given a draw, you would be satisfied.
Yeah.
But you know what? To go and play that well and make some mistakes, you have to look on the positive side and say, if we play half as good again and don't make any mistakes, we'll win comfortably.
Meanwhile, the big talking point yesterday was, of course, Frank Leboeuf being at Stamford Bridge for Chelsea against Lille. The undercard to that was the fact that Chelsea won by 2-0. No Romelu Lukaku, though, in the starting 11. Didn't come on at all. This is what Thomas Tuchel had to say after the game.
The focus was today on intensity, on high-speed game, and on also hard work against the ball, off the ball, to have an intensive teamwork. And Romelu struggled in the last games a little bit to deliver that. That's what I meant when I said I felt him a bit tired, not only mentally tired, but also physically tired, which I can understand. He played, like, I think since the Liverpool game, and he started every match for us, and were like some extra times in it as well. And it is like this. And today we went for three other players and Kai is in a very good shape, full of confidence, and gives a lot of work rate and high intensive meters to the team. And that was the decision today. For Sunday, we have 4 days to decide and to recover. And of course, he has every chance to play. You can clearly see, I mean, we have now a strong win, we had a strong performance, it was a tough match, and almost every question is about Romelu. So the focus is huge. There are like 9 other players who did not play, and we should never forget that we consider this sport a team sport. And this is it. And then the 11 guys who play do everything to commit fully to what we plan and to commit fully to their teammates. And the guys from the bench have to do the same. And this is how it works, especially at Chelsea and especially for us. And this is how we win football games.
Romelu Lukaku tired then out of those 7 touches in that match.
What?
Against Crystal Palace. It's the old cliche, isn't it, Stevie? Tired, giving him a rest, but you take a look at it. This isn't a schedule that is going to stop your striker from scoring goals.
No. That's all it is. It's excuses. I think he makes a good point, because it is becoming a little overbearing now. It's all about Lukaku.
Yeah, that's us, Stevie.
We are the ones that are doing it, Stevie.
I was not talking about it.
I wish people would just be quiet.
Who are these people?
If you're playing for Chelsea, if you're somebody like Werner, you're delighted because he's been left alone because he's been rubbish. But in general, you get fed up when somebody every single day of the week is in the back pages and it's about them. It does get old. But the fact is, the only way he has to play on Sunday is if Kai Havertz is injured.
Right, that's it.
Because it's a cup final at the end of the day, and you have to put a side there that's going to win. And so he doesn't play.
By the way, it's not a coincidence that Kai Havertz is now playing better and scoring goals and having an impact when Romelu Lukaku is struggling, because all the pressure is on Lukaku. Right. All the pressure that used to be on Werner, on Kai Havertz. We were having these conversations about Kai Havertz and Timo Werner. Well, where's Chelsea going to get goals for? Where are they going to get their productivity from? Oh my goodness, is Havertz going to come good? Is Timo Werner going to come good? Now Romelu Lukaku is the focus of all the negativity, and Kai Havertz is saying, hey, look at me. I can play. I can score goals. He's enjoying himself at Chelsea. Lukaku, not so much. Lukaku!
What did you make of Tuchel's comments, Frank?
I would say that I was told yesterday, you know, that in fact, Tuchel looks at the training sessions and really pick the players who are the best at the training session. He doesn't really care if you've been bought 100 million euros. He wants the best. And because he's struggling to find the best three at front, he's only picking the players who does the best at the training session. And definitely, he was saying that Havertz, Ziyech and Pulisic were the best at the training session. It's why he played. So he's living with the players. He knows them. We're not every day at the training session to know how they cope and how they feel and if they're tired physically or mentally. So I have to trust him. And yesterday, Havertz did the job. So I agree with Ali. If Havertz is fit and he wants to play, Lukaku is going to be on the bench.
Nedim, you're going to this game, of course, for us. You're going to be sat on the sideline next to Lukaku. There's no way he's going to start.
I'm going to be sitting a bit further back, to be honest. I really hope he's not sitting next to me. I really, really hope it. But I like what Frank said there about Tuchel, about how he's judging it based on how people train and things like that, because that should matter. And I think he's also sort of hit the nail on the head, because he said for this game, we wanted people who were sort of more high energy, high press, high this. And for as good as Lukaku is, that's not really something which comes to the forefront of my mind when I think about his style of play. So I think it was the right setup for that game. And I think when you go up against Liverpool, it's going to be interesting. Like, do you want somebody who's going to be a target man against Liverpool's two big centre-halves? Who knows? Maybe not. Maybe Havertz would be the right sort of matchup. But I think they're going to have to match Liverpool's high tempo for that game. So it seems like it'd be leaning towards Havertz. But that's provided he trains well over the next 4 days. But I think it should be a fantastic game, and I'm sure you'll see my face there, yeah?
Well, despite the fact you're going to see...
I find that a little strange.
Which bit? Well, we don't have time to talk about it, too.
We'll
talk about that more ahead of the game. Chelsea against Liverpool live on ESPN Plus at 11 a.m.
Can you get his custard pie out of my face?
Meanwhile, Villarreal taking on. We've got days to talk about that stuff.
Oh, thank you.
It's all right. That's okay.
He finds it strange.
We'd already put the graphic up. We couldn't bring it back. You know, that's it. We kind of made the move.
thanks for keeping up, Steve.
Villarreal 1, Juventus 1. Of course, is how it finished yesterday in the Champions League. A perfect start for Juventus. Flavic opening the scoring. Dani Parejo then with the equaliser for Villarreal in the second half. Max Allegri not happy afterwards, saying it was a decisive error. Now, this is on the error that Rabiot made. Parejo was left totally alone in the box. It was 6-1. Rabiot didn't follow him and we stayed still. We should have done better. It's interesting, Steve, because yesterday you picked up the fact it was De Ligt, wasn't it, that you felt that he lost his man. He's talking about Rabiot. Is it Rabiot an easy target? Because obviously...
I don't know why. He's doing this for a reason.
Right.
Because I think it's really simple. When you play as a defender and you play as a centre-back, your job is, if anything's going wrong in front of you, your job is to sort it out. And that would include, if somebody doesn't have their man, you're now in a position to affect the play.
Right.
And so the fact that he just runs out and leaves a hole, instead of holding his ground, having a look around, summing up the situation, OK, Rabiot might not have Parejo, but then guess who has Parejo? De Ligt.
Right.
And then the whole thing's avoided. So my opinion is he's not doing this just because he didn't pick his runner up. He's sending a message to Rabiot.
Right, sort it out.
Well, it's either I don't fancy you or you better get better.
Right. Frank?
Yes, it's a real message, because for me, De Ligt and Rabiot have to share the responsibility of the goal, because yes, we all know 25 yards away from your own goal, you don't leave a player. You keep your player and you follow him. That's the rule for Rabiot. But put Thiago Silva on De Ligt's position, and I tell you, they don't concede the goal, because he knows that in case Rabiot gets lazy, he will have to compensate and cover it. And De Ligt is maybe, again, too young to feel that way and to anticipate that. He went too far right, too far up, and didn't cover in case Rabiot didn't follow. But for Allegri, I agree with Stevie, that's a real message. And the guy will have to sort the problem out next time, and to make sure that he's more tuned in, because it's a Champions League game. You can't make those silly mistakes.
The boys will be back for extra time. You can always check that out over on our YouTube channel. They delight in answering your questions. Be sure to check it out. Meanwhile, more news coming out of Juventus. Weston McKennie out for 8 to 12 weeks after fracturing two bones in his foot, meaning he'll miss those three remaining World Cup qualifiers for the US. Just a reminder how things look and who they face going into these matches. Obviously, away against Mexico, then it's home against Panama, and then away against Costa Rica. For more on this, I want to welcome in former US international DeMarcus Beasley is with us. DeMarcus, let's just take a look, shall we, at the table and look at how things stand going into those three remaining matches. It's not a given. It's not a complete layup that the US are going to qualify easily from CONCACAF when you take a look at how things stand going in to those three remaining ties. So given that, how much of a blow is this injury to Weston?
Yeah, it's a big blow. We can all say arguably he's been our best player over the last, I'd say, 3 to 4 months, and playing well at Juventus, playing well with the U.S. national team, it's a big blow. He's a really big part of that midfield. They lose something when he's not playing. We know Tyler's qualities, we know Musa's qualities, but when Weston's in the midfield, he gives something different. You know, he can defend, he can attack, he scores goals, he's a great header of the ball. So going into the toughest stretch, and World Cup qualifying without, you know, your best player, it's going to be difficult. They're going to miss him for sure.
Yeah, for sure. How impressed have you been overall with him at Juventus this season?
Incredibly impressed. You know, he's grown, I think, in Juventus. And, you know, he got a little bit of criticism last season because of his plays in and out of the lineup. But he's shown, you know, how strong mentally he is as a player and as a young man. You know, I'm sure he listened to all the critics, and, you know, maybe him having to leave Juventus to get more playing time. But you see now he's an important player. He's a player that's, I'm sure, probably the first or even second player that the manager puts on a team sheet, because he's that good and he's that in form at the moment. So I'm incredibly impressed with his progress, and, you know, he's one of my favorite players to watch.
Meanwhile, it's been a strange old season, as it, for Christian Pulisic, of course, struggling with injury and then played out of position quite a few times when he started for Chelsea. I think without a doubt, one of his best performances of the season was yesterday against Lille. Just a reminder of what he can offer.
Yeah, for sure. Christian is a very, very talented player. We all know that. We all know when he's in form, he's, you know, I think one of the best attacking U.S. midfielders we've ever had in our throughout the ranks. So, you know, I think with him, it's just, you know, getting a position that he can consistently play in. I know he says he can play as a number nine, he can play on the right, he can play on the left. But when he plays on the left side of midfield, and he's able to cut in and have that freedom to combine and to really, you know, create havoc on defenders, he's at his best. And I hope, you know, as an American fan, you know, I'm a fan now, as an American fan, I hope that, you know, they play him more so on the left, more so than as a number nine.
Yeah, we were talking about this yesterday with Stevie, the fact that there aren't many players in the modern game that can really run at you in the way that Pulisic can. And as you say, from a defender's perspective, that's kind of your worst nightmare.
Yeah, it is. As soon as you get, you know, you start backing up in your own on the balls of your feet, it's over. The player can go, he can go right, he can go left. And Christian, he's so skilled, and he's so he has the ball's like a glue to his foot. When you see him dribble, it doesn't really get, you know, too far ahead of him. So he has that ability and that technique to be able to dribble at you with speed and technique and still with control of the ball and be able to go right, left. And, you know, he's done it millions of times in the Premier League with the national team. And he just needs to get that consistency level back up with Chelsea, and he'll be fine.
Meanwhile, closer to home, it's crazy to think that the new MLS season is upon us this weekend. The break seems to have absolutely flown by. A full slate of matches for us to look forward to, DeMarcus. Which one in particular should we really keep an eye out for?
I'm going to look out for two of them. I'm going to say two. The Inter Miami versus Chicago. I don't know. We don't know if Shakiri is going to start, but obviously it's my old club. And I want to see them, you know, do well. And they've made quite a few new players. They signed a couple new players this year, so I'm really seeing how they fit and how they can, get a nice start with Easy at the helm. So I'm looking forward to an Inter Miami and Chicago match for sure.
Overall, who's the team to beat this year?
Oh man, I mean. You look at NYFC, and obviously they won the championship last season. But I still look at a Seattle and them bringing in Rusnik from Real Salt Lake. I just think bringing that piece of a already fueled machine is going to create havoc in MLS. I think that we all know the West is a very 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 tough conference to play in. But I think adding that piece to their puzzle, I think will maybe get them over the hump, and I think Seattle will be the team to beat this season.
We got to wait for the summer, of course, for Insigne to join. How many goals is he going to get, DeMarcus? You imagine he's going to be scoring for fun.
You would think so. If he's anything like Giovinco, it's going to be fun to watch. We're excited as a fan of the game to have those type of players come to our league is great. It's exciting. Anytime he's in any stadium, he's going to bring a crowd with him. So hopefully he emulates a little bit of, or even more than what Giovinco did. And if they did, Toronto has a great player on their hands.
DeMarcus Beasley, as always, thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated. Enjoy that opening weekend of MLS. And just a reminder, for more on the start of a brand new season, be sure to check out the latest edition of Football Americas. That drops tomorrow here on ESPN+. Meanwhile, on Wednesday, it's that crunch time, isn't it, in the She Believes Cup as the US women take on Iceland. That game live on ESPN2 at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Just a reminder, La Liga continues on ESPN Plus this weekend. It all starts with Levante against Elche. And on Saturday, Real Madrid away against Rayo in the Mini Madrid Derby. And on Sunday, Barca take on Athletic Club. All those matches live on Plus. Coverage of the Barca game starts at 2:30 Eastern. Bundesliga as well for you on Friday. Hoffenheim against Stuttgart on Saturday. Eintracht Frankfurt against Bayern Munich is the late game. And then Sunday, Leipzig away against Bochum. And it's Augsburg against Borussia Dortmund. That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Anything to say, Stevie?
We don't have enough time, Steve.
Not you.
No, good, right? Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Stay tuned. Frank and Nadim are back for Extra Time. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Ali's here, Stevie, Nadim as well. Frank is back from his Chelsea adventure. Frank, we were discussing yesterday whether or not you would get paid for that.
No, not at all. I was invited, so I didn't pay the Eurostar, didn't pay the hotel, if you wanted to know everything, but I had to pay for my food, and I wasn't paid at all. So, but I was with my lovely wife, so it was a very nice time in London.
Beautiful, very nice. How was the Eurostar?
Long, and too many people making too many noises when I want to have a nap, but otherwise it was fine.
You took your wife, it's your own fault.
Well, I still need my nap, you know, in the afternoon. So, and after I'm fully aware that my wife is alongside me. So, but that's just for my nap.
Imagine how grumpy Frank can be, no nap.
Grumpy Frank.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That's when he should read his own book, you know?
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Self-help book.
Yeah, what, to put him to sleep?
Yes. Like, correct. Yep. There you go.
Stevie, Ronaldo be benched? Not effective against Atleti today, or is it Rashford's fault for not connecting with him?
Ooh, wow, this is a tester, because it's actually getting to that time. Because I'm not so sure I can remember when I looked at Ronaldo and thought, this is the guy that's won everything available in his whole career.
Yep.
He's beginning to look like just another player now. So I think it's getting close to that time, to be honest. Does Ranić have the stomach?
I think he does, doesn't he? Yeah.
I'm not so sure. I would certainly make a change. I would put Rashford up through the middle.
Nadim, what do you do with Ronaldo?
I think he's one of those players where his value on the field, even when he's not playing well, will be greater than his value, say, because I can't picture him being an impact substitute, because I think he'll just think, well, what's the point of me being here? You know, if there's somewhere else where I can start, I'll just go somewhere else. So I think for now, you just keep him on and hope that he finds form, and hope overall, really, though, that the team finds a way to be more creative, because at the minute, you know, that's probably why he's not looking as good as, say, he has done in times gone by, because I'd say if he was in a better side or a side that was in greater form, he probably would have scored more goals. So I can't necessarily say it's all down to him.
Frank, you had your hand up. Sorry, Stevie.
How many customers?
Well, the thing is, I will agree with Ned. I think you have to play him, because on the bench he will be completely useless. You don't put Ronaldo on the bench and you don't put him in after an hour, because I don't think he's going to be useful. Do you know what? I agree with Stevie. I think there is a time where you have to think about what do I do in my life and in my career, and this may be the time for Ronaldo at the end of the career to wonder and have a discussion with himself or maybe some of his siblings to know what he has to do for the rest of his career, if there is a future in his career. But I feel that I don't want to have pity for Ronaldo, because he's been so much on the top for so many years that I don't want him, you know, being a normal player. He's been an exceptional player. I prefer him to give up his career at the top instead of maybe trying to play 2-3 more years and not being the player that he used to be.
I think he wants you to talk.
You want to say something now?
No, I'm good, thanks.
Ali, does not having away goals matter result in a less interesting game? Away teams seem to just sit back and hope for a draw.
I mean, of course it matters. And it was a point of conversation every time that we were talking about Champions League and away goal and how you approach the game and what you do and what you're willing to risk, not only as an away team, but what you're willing to risk as a home team, because it made those initial games kind of conservative from the home team in that they didn't want to give an away goal. So it changed the dynamics of the game. I like it this way.
Right.
I like it where a goal is a goal is a goal. And it the value of a goal doesn't change whether you're here, there, or anywhere. I think it's a straight up competition rather than speculating with a result.
Steve?
I don't. I like the away goals. I think, again, like most things, when something gets changed, it benefits the bigger and better teams. You know, you've got Glasgow Rangers, a great example. Now, Borussia Dortmund are a far superior team than Glasgow Rangers. Mm-hmm. Far superior team. But Glasgow Rangers go away to Dortmund and win 4-2. Now, a performance like that, as good as that is, because there's no away goals, it's probably still not going to be enough. I think you're rewarding the better side because they can, again, make a mistake.
Does that make any sense, Stevie, as an example?
How, of course it does.
Why?
Well, do you think Borussia Dortmund...
The only way the away goal would matter if they go...
Shut up and I'll tell you.
The only way it matters if Dortmund went there and won 4-2.
Rangers just went to Dortmund and won 4-2.
Yeah,
right?
No, exactly. But well, it just seems such a strange example to use.
Tell me when you're finished and I can talk.
Come on.
My problem is, Rangers now, right, under normal circumstances, in my opinion, only would have to score one goal at Ibrox to pretty much ensure they'd go through. Because that means they have to score how many? They'd have to score like four goals, Dortmund, to get through.
Right? Yeah.
No, right. Three.
No, if Rangers score,
right,
they've got five.
Right.
Yeah.
So they would have to score four.
Okay.
Because if it's carry if it doubles one. Up, then they've got to score more goals. They've got right. to score five.
Right.
So you're rewarding the better team.
Oh, but if you can't hold on to a 4-2 lead at home, you don't deserve to go through.
Well, what a stupid cliche.
What?
Well, I'll say more. If you can't hold on, you don't deserve to win it. It's got nothing to do with football on the field, you pudding heap.
But it has nothing to do with football on the field.
It's rewarding the better sides because the better sides can 9 times out of 10 on the will win the game.
Right. Isn't that what you want the better sides going through?
Well, I'll tell you... Oh, Jesus Christ. Seriously, I'm just telling you, everything that's done today benefits the bigger teams and the better teams.
Right.
The substitution rule. Guess who that benefits?
Yeah, okay.
You make five changes. Right. Every single thing. All the TV money. Guess who gets more? The big teams. Every single thing goes to the big teams.
Right.
So you don't like
that
the
rule.
You don't like the Super
that
League.
That rule goes against the teams that who could produce a performance.
Right.
But ultimately not get the real chance to go through because the other team are so good that even though they've scored four away, they're still going to... They only need to beat 2-0.
Right.
And it's extra time. They're going to lose.
Nadim, your thoughts on this?
I feel like I like the new rule, but I'll have to see what these second legs are like because in some ways right. I like the fact that, say, as an away team, you can go somewhere and you're trying to get the win because you don't have that advantage anymore if it's, say, like 2-2 or something. Like, the 2-1 matters so much more. Because I think historically... Because I like the old away goals rule. But say if you're winning 2-1 away from home, you're thinking, you know, this is going to be a great result. Whereas in the past, the 2-2, you'd probably take that as well. So I think overall, it means that the tie is always still going. So going into that second leg, you're not going to be worried about this permutation or these four permutations that mean that you're out. It's just a case of can you win? Can you score can you score more goals than the opposition, yes or no? And I think in some ways, making it simpler makes it probably easier for people to understand. But like I say, I'll probably reserve my full judgment until after this round of fixtures is over.
Nadim, you got me a pudding head.
At the time, that was the nicest thing I could think of saying. There were other things going through my mind.
Nadim, have you ever played for a team that beat all the bigger sides but struggled against smaller teams?
Yeah, I did actually. So in 2012, that year when City won the league and I was at QPR for the second half of the season, we lost every away game. But then in the last 5 weeks of the season at home, we beat Arsenal, we beat Spurs, we beat Liverpool and maybe beat a couple of other big teams. And that was the run that basically kept us up. But like I say, we'd go away to anyone, any team. If you could field 11 players, I could almost guarantee that we'd lose. So I think that was the time when that was the case. And it was certainly memorable, to say the least.
Frank, even though he's 37, should PSG regret letting Thiago Silva go? Even at his age, he's still a world-class defender.
Yeah, I think they regret, because what he's doing for Paris Saint-Germain is absolutely fantastic. I talked about him yesterday, and I explained why, you know, he's been such an influential player at Chelsea, where for Paris Saint-Germain, I remember the remontada that Paris Saint-Germain played against Barcelona, that he was felt guilty for the situation when he dropped too much, didn't show his leader position. And I was agreeing with the journalist. I think at Paris Saint-Germain, it was very hard to show the best of Thiago Silva and the fact that he was a real skipper. Because he plays with younger players, because he has his background and because of his age, naturally, when he signed for Chelsea, the younger players, younger players listened to him and gave him the position straight away of a leader. And he's a fantastic player. And he's a real leader, he's a natural leader, but he doesn't like to impose himself. So when it's natural, he's okay, and it's the case with Chelsea, and it's why he's so good. And when he has to force it, like at Paris Saint-Germain, it's not that obvious, and it becomes something not clear in a way.
And this is also highlighted by the fact that in bringing Sergio Ramos, you were supposed to solve this issue. PSG.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. So that hasn't quite worked out. And so therefore, if you're a PSG fan and you see Thiago Silva playing for Chelsea, you go, wait a second.
Yeah.
The guy that was supposed to play for him is sitting in the stands and hasn't played for us.
Nathan, why and how does players like Mitrovic flop time after time in the Premier League but break records in the Championship? 32 goals he's already got this season, which is a record.
So 32 goals at this stage of the season is bonkers. And I've played against Mitrovic and I've played against him in the Championship when he was at Fulham. And the key difference is Fulham in the Championship are a very, very good side. They control games, they create a ton of chances. And he's a good finisher, so he takes a lot. You know, he's their focal point, all that stuff. But then he goes to the Premier League and you're not really the favourite against anybody. Your style of play doesn't really set you apart from anybody because everybody up there can play. But they've also got the tactical side of things. They defend you better. And in the Premier League, you know, as you come up, you tend to score fewer goals. So I think that is essentially the difference. It's just the makeup of the league itself. And the Premier League is as tough as it is. So as you come up, it doesn't matter whether you score 30, 40 goals down there. As soon as you come up, your chances are going to be fewer and far between. And your team itself doesn't have the same status that it has in the Championship. So as a consequence, there's a real, like, realization for some as you go up, like, this is maybe not for me. And that's why some teams and some fans, not all of them, they prefer seeing their teams winning the Championship than just barely survive in the Premier League. And I think maybe Fulham perhaps could be one of those sides.
Next question. I know one of you have been. I'm not sure about the others. I don't think you would have been. Have you ever been fined by your club? If so, why? Nadim?
Yes, have I. So there were some dark, there were some bad times at QPR where they were kind of like, they kind of got the balance wrong in terms of trying to take money back from the players whilst also trying to keep them motivated. So we almost got to a point in the season where, you know, if they create the fine where if somebody was running through on goal and you're winning 1-0 and you took them down, you'd have to pay the fine even though it might win you the game. So that within that same season, I remember there's a cliche, here's something that always gets said: whenever you lose a game badly, the coaches will come in and say, you guys didn't even lay a glove on the opposition, why did you even bother? So we were losing a game, it was 4-0 away from home. So one of my teammates this is when I was captain, putting a big foul on someone. I was frustrated or whatever. But then one of their players came over and pushed him. So I ran over and shoulder barged the guy to get him off my player. And I got shown a red card for it. The manager at the time, Ian Holloway, said, you know, I'm glad that you stuck up for your teammate. But then when I went into training on the Monday, I had a 2 weeks wage fine for sticking up for him for taking the red card. So in that moment, that's when I knew, like, maybe there is no right answer to this situation whereby, like, so do I let someone get bullied away from home or do I try and stick up for him? But the fact is they made me pay the money and that's what it is at the end of the day.
How much was 2 weeks' wages, Nathan?
It's about £90, so probably about $120,
wow.
I think.
Blimey, like yeah, the exchange rate.
So it was a lot of money. Yeah,
yeah,
a lot of
most
money, yeah.
Definitely. Some would say overpaid. Frank?
No, I'm sorry. I've been a very nice person all my career long, and I've never been fined by my club because I was late or something like that. No, no, nothing. Nothing interesting to say about that.
That's all right. I'm guessing you haven't.
Nope.
No.
Clean. Clean living.
No, I never got fined by a club, but I once got...
But no, you were in charge of the Revs and you got fined on more than one occasion.
Yeah, but that's not by the club. That's by MLS.
Right.
But as a player, when I was at Notts County, I once got dropped for being late for a meeting.
Right.
But the problem was, nobody told me there was a meeting.
Oh.
Well, maybe they said something and you weren't paying attention.
Well, this is before email, so you're not being
technical.
There
was no cell phones, I didn't have a cell phone or anything like that.
Yeah.
And so I was playing at Notts County. We trained in the morning and we had a game that night in the Carabao Cup.
Right.
Which, whatever it was called back then. So after we finished training, we were all to be ready for the bus at 2 o'clock. So I nipped into Nottingham to do something.
Oh, take some shopping.
I got back, plenty of time.
Yeah.
And somebody at the door was waiting for me to tell me that they were having a meeting.
Oh.
So the guy in charge was Colin Murphy. I went to the meeting and he went absolutely ballistic. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I said, I can't believe for a meeting that I didn't know we were having.
Right.
But of course he was going
so
ballistic.
How did everyone else know there was a meeting and you didn't?
Because they stayed at the ground.
Right, because you went shopping.
I went and did an errand.
Oh.
So I had no
idea. A mysterious errand.
What was your errand?
So he told me, he said, right, you're not playing tonight.
I'm far more interested about
your
errand,
Stevie,
than I am about anything else.
No idea.
I think you do.
No idea.
How much did you have to pay MLS?
$2,000 was the most I paid.
How enjoyable was that, writing that check?
Not good going home.
No.
Tell them the person that writes the cheque. That was a problem.
Final one, Frank. Have you ever scored for and against your team in the same match?
I certainly scored on goals. But I never did I never did that, you know. Not that I recall. No, for sure. Never did that.
I'm pretty sure Craig did at Anfield. I think he told me about that.
I did that.
I think he did. Nathan?
Nah, no chance at all. I barely scored a goal in general, so to catch both like that, that didn't happen.
This is the back of Sebastian Allaire doing it today. Ali?
No. I did score an own goal once off my backside. It was nice.
Yeah, well, you know. Ample.
Yes, there's plenty of room there. Plenty of room there.
No. Same as the boys. A couple of own goals.
That is it. We're done. Thank you very much, everyone. It has been interesting. From this pudding head to another pudding head. Goodbye. We'll be back. So you won't call Kay a pudding head. She's on tomorrow.
Oh, I'm very polite with you.
I assume that's not nice, right?
No, it's not nice at all.
What? No. In the realms of not nice, it was very nice.
And here is some bonus material for you. Welcome to the defining numbers delivered by FedEx. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Ali Moreno and Stevie Nicol. Frank LaBeouf is also with us. We've seen every first leg now, haven't we, in the round of 16 of the Champions League. And it's thrown up some interesting talking points when it comes to individuals. And let's start off with a classic, shall we? Kylian Mbappe taking on Mohamed Salah. Both have blown up the Champions League so far this season. I suppose the question is simple. The answer maybe not so much, Stephen. We're in a pickup game. Who are you picking?
Wow. That's an unfair question. Well, let me tell you what I think the difference between the two players are.
If we're just having a pickup game, right, you got first pick. Are you picking Mbappe or are you picking Salah?
Here we go. Here we go.
Have I got the answer?
Well,
I think so.
Kind of
I would
the point
hope so.
Of the whole
what,
segment.
Right, I'm going to go with Mbappe then. And the reason I'm going to go with Mbappe is because he plays a simpler game. Salah's goals and his play in general are from situations a lot of the time where he shouldn't be able to. Whereas Mbappe, he has assists because he plays a simpler game, because he's looking for simpler passes and the passes that are on.
Right.
Whereas Salah even if a pass is on, he's more interested in putting it in the back of the net, and that's why he ends up with more goals. So I think Mbappe plays a simpler game. And because he plays a simpler game, it might seem a strange thing to say, because Salah's got so many goals. But I think to be consistent is easier when you play the type of game that Mbappe does than you do the one that Salah does. I mean, look at Salah at Chelsea.
Right.
You know, because of the way he plays and it wasn't happening and the rest of the team weren't happening and weren't helping him, then they end up getting rid of him. That's not going to happen to somebody like Mbappe.
It's a much simpler answer for me. I'll take Kylian Mbappe because I think he's a better player.
Right.
I think that Kylian Mbappe can hurt you in many more ways than Mohamed Salah can. And while Mohamed Salah has been explosive for Liverpool and has improved his finishing, which I think has taken his game to an elite level, I really think that Mbappe can hurt you in so many different ways with his speed, with his ability to score goals himself, to create for himself, but he can also create for others and do so with consistency. I'm going to go Mbappe.
Frank?
I'm confused, I have to say, because definitely I agree with the guy, you know, in terms of creation, in terms of skills, I definitely go for Mbappe. But now his commitment defensively creates problem to his team. So I know it's not his main concern and his main task, but it's important in a modern game. I think Salah make the effort to what they call now the gegenpressing, the contra-pressing, where he loses the ball, he tries to get it back, he gets back into position, where Mbappe doesn't. So having said that, I will disagree with the guy. I will pick Salah.
Wow, I wasn't expecting that, Frank. Meanwhile, let's talk about your former team, Chelsea, of course, in action, looking good against Lille. The big talking point going into that game was the fact that Romelu Lukaku was dropped to the bench after only touching the ball 7 times at the weekend against Crystal Palace. Of course, it's Chelsea against Liverpool in the Carabao Cup this weekend. At the moment, Frank, I suppose, same question. You pick up game, who are you picking first, Havertz or Lukaku?
Well, especially because you have the Carabao Cup against Liverpool and two big fellow centre-backs, I will go for Havertz, because I don't think Lukaku, on top of his the fact he's not very confident about his football, won't serve the team as much as he would do if the two players that he will face wouldn't be that big. So I will go for Havertz because he's confident, because his skills is at the top, and also because I feel it's better for the Chelsea team right now.
Lukaku? I'm taking Lukaku.
Really?
Yes, I am. See, I believe in the center forward and in the true center forward. Now he hasn't played
but
like
this
it.
This version of Lukaku.
Yes, I know. I know. I am well aware of the numbers and I'm well aware of the struggles. But let's not forget this. The reason that Chelsea went and searched out and brought Lukaku to Chelsea was because they did not think enough of Kai Havertz and Timo Werner. I'm still going to believe in Romelu Lukaku.
Well, you have to go with Havertz. Listen, Frank and I played centre back.
Right.
And all day long, you'd rather play against a big, strong, physical guy as opposed to a guy with a great football brain.
Okay.
All day long. It's not a choice. It's right. Really an easy choice.
Simple.
Play against the guy who you know exactly what it'll take to beat him. You know where he's going to be. You know his touch isn't that great. Whereas you look at Havertz and you're like, well, where's he going to be in the box?
Right.
You know, is he going to play little 1-2s? Is he going to run in behind me?
Okay.
He's actually quite good in the air.
Put you on your toes.
He's got a better football brain and is a better overall footballer.
It's amazing that given the struggles of Lukaku, how now we all think of Kai Havertz as this most wonderful talent that had failed up until this point with Chelsea.
We're talking with likes of Salah and Mbappe, aren't we? We're talking about some of the biggest strikers, the biggest names in world football, but they've all been eclipsed by one player so far in the Champions League. So good, in fact, he could score an own goal as well in the clash against Benfica. Sebastian Haller, 11 goals this season. How do you explain this, Ali? Of course, a player who struggled at West Ham, went to Ajax, just scoring goals for fun.
Yeah, what's funny is that actually he scores a goal and had a couple of chances as well to score even more. But strikers, they thrive on confidence. They thrive in not only putting the ball in the back of the net, but the fact that because you're confident, you now feel like every chance is coming your way. Isn't it amazing that when you're not scoring goals, you also feel like you're not getting touches on the ball, Romelu Lukaku, that you're not quite active enough, that you don't have a feeling as to where the ball is going to be? In the case of Sebastian Haller, what we're seeing, obviously, is a guy with a lot of confidence that knows where the ball is going to be, that has a good feeling for the game inside the 18-yard box, and when you put the ball in the back of the net, guess what? It's going to keep happening. He just better ride this wave for as long as he possibly can. Because let me tell you, history tells us, even in Sebastian Haller's history, that this is going to disappear at some point.
Right.
It may not be right now. It may not be next week, but it's going to disappear. So you might as well enjoy it.
It's fun though, Stevie. Must be great when you're in this sort of room.
Well, I think it tells you pre-West Ham and post-West Ham that this guy's problem is going to be always not whether he's got ability to score goals.
Yeah.
But does he have the mentality to, when things are not going well, get through it and rise above it and still contribute? Because it's not about talent. You know, you don't score that amount of goals if you're not talented and have a certain quality that not many other players have. So that means it's what's going on between his ears. So if he can sort that out, he may come back and play in a bigger and better league.
Thank you very much, as always, gents. That's the defining numbers delivered by FedEx.